Hello, my beautiful womaning listeners. Welcome back. My guest this week is Amy Sperling. Amy is the founder and CEO of Compt, an HR software that enables companies to offer truly personalized employee perks while being fully tax compliant and inclusive for global teams. Amy's experience as a former three-time CFO and two-time COO managing finance and HR drives her belief that companies and employees can achieve much more together when employees are fully supported. A seasoned executive with nearly 20 years of experience in leadership roles at venture-backed companies, Amy has closed over 10 rounds of financing totaling more than $200 million and managed two acquisitions to close. Amy received her Master of Business Administration and a Bachelor of Arts. I'm so honored to have Amy on the podcast. I absolutely love the concept behind Compt. I think it's incredibly innovative. We are changing the work culture so drastically that as a society, we are changing our expectations of work culture so drastically. And I think it is so incredibly intelligent to found a company that prioritizes employees on the personal level. This conversation brought so much insight. Amy is an amazing entrepreneur and I loved this conversation. Now let's get on over to my conversation with Amy.
Welcome to the Woman Inc. podcast. This is the place for the new generation of women looking to lead the life of their absolute dreams. I'm your host, Jenna Toddy, entrepreneur, life coach, and strategist for modern businesswomen and entrepreneurs. I am a city girl, sriracha lover, and that friend who will hype you up when you forget how powerful you truly are. I am on a mission to make Women Inc. the most powerful network of women who are leveling up, owning what they want, and becoming who they've always wanted to be. Have you ever wondered what it would look like if you went all in on yourself, no turning back? If so, you are in the right place, my girl. Let's get started.
Amy, hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. I am very excited to dive into Compt because I feel like this is such a relevant conversation right now and no one knows how to retain people. So I cannot wait to chat with you.
I would agree. It's something that is coming up everywhere, like every industry, every company, everybody's trying to figure out, all right, how do I keep people that I need to keep in place when, you know, money's not endless. And so we've got to figure out how we do this in the most cost-effective way possible. So it's definitely an ongoing conversation right now.
So walk us through the beginning days of starting Compt. I know you have an amazing background, but what prompted you to say, okay, this is the company I have to start?
An extreme level of frustration is what drove me to start the company. So I've been, you know, a CFO a bunch of times, a COO a couple of times. So managing finance and HR in every one of those companies where you're, you know, tasked with, all right, keep an eye on the money, make sure you don't run out. And at the same time, you have to figure out how to hire the best people, how to keep them, how to make sure that they're happy once they're there, all of those things. And those two are usually in conflict. Finance wants to spend very little, but to keep people, you need to keep spending more. And so sitting in the middle of this seemingly hopeless problem where every employee through the door would say, you know, I don't want the pet insurance you offered. I don't have pets, but I really want something that relates to me in my life. And I'd have to say no all the time. All I said was no, which was really frustrating. And it's okay, look, we do need to compete for talent. We do need to do this in a really interesting way, but how do we do that and make everybody happy? And so I kind of looked around, hoped somebody would build me a magical solution and then realized nobody was. And, you know, I turned 40 and said, fine, I'll go build it myself. Like I've had it. So decided to build Compt.
I love it. Okay. Walk us through the platform. How does it work?
Sure. So the platform is a stipend reimbursement platform, which means that as a company, you can set parameters around how much money you want people to be able to spend over what time period, where you want them to focus, because these things should line up with your, you know, company culture and goals. So things like, hey, we want to support your wellness. So here's $100 this quarter to go spend on your wellness. But instead of me as an HR person saying, oh, but you can use it at this one gym that you may or may not want to go to, it's saying we support your wellness and you're an adult and you have your own healthcare professionals. decide what you want to do. So you can go and spend it on yoga or running shoes or a mental health app or, you know, whatever it may be that you determine supports your wellness. So no vendors, not hemming you in on, hey, here's a bundle of stuff you've got to search through, just making it to where companies can support their employees' lives in a way that matters to employees.
What do you feel like, looking at all the options that people are picking, what is a trend that this is what people really want? This is what employees are looking for in general.
The biggest trend is personalization. Don't tell me what to do. So what's been fascinating is we don't have a marketplace. There are marketplaces out there that say, hey, for wellness in particular, you know, here's 30 different vendors you could use, you know, that'll make employees happy. We have industry setting employee engagement, which means that, you know, on our platform, over 90% of employees use their stipends. Nobody can match that. So we actually looked at how many different vendors people were using. So we took a sample of our people for a year and watched them. We watched 8,700 people and said, all right, how many different vendors did they use? Because when you're getting that kind of engagement, you got to see what your marketplace would look like. Guess how many different vendors they used in that time period?
No idea.
27,000.
Wow.
So there's no trend. The trend is let people do what they want to do. Support people's lives in the way that they want to determine. So we saw a lot of things like, because this cuts across not just wellness, but work from home and family and all kinds of categories. What we found was that people tend to spend local. So local yoga instructors, personal trainers, coffee shops, depending on the category, of course. So people are more inclined to spend in their local communities when they're given the option to spend where they would prefer to spend rather than a marketplace, which is going to have 20 to 30 vendors that are probably big box stores that you may or may not want to shop at. So it opens up the whole world of vendors for people in a really cool way.
I love it. I feel like anywhere I've ever worked, I've never used any of the perks. I'm like,
exactly.
I don't want your like Target gift card.
Exactly. It's like, not another gift card. Don't give me a gift card. I was actually yelling, I got a referral gift card the other day and I was like, don't give me a gift card, just anything but that. Like then I'm going to have to remember to use it and then I'm going to waste money and that's going to annoy me and hate gift cards.
I do too. I hate them. So how do you go from CFO to building a service provider business? Like how did you have the understanding of how to build this business? Or were you just learning as you were going?
So I don't write code. So I'm certainly not the person who is actually writing the lines of code for the software business. All of my prior companies had been software businesses. So even though I was the CFO in a very specific type of business. So how you structure a company, the different types of roles you need to hire for was not new to me, especially since I managed HR as well. Making sure you get the right people, that is something that is key because I don't write code. I'm not a marketer. You know, I needed to have those key early folks to be building the platform. Otherwise, we were going to crash and burn. I knew what I wanted, but it needs to show up in, you know, the interwebs and you need to have somebody who can actually do that. So it was really all a hiring piece versus a, okay, what do I have to do next? CFOs have the back channel on that. We know how to set up legal entities. We know how to structure legal documents and fundraise and all of that stuff was easy compared to, okay, let's figure out these other pieces.
And you raised over 10 rounds of funding. Is that right?
Not at this company. So, and it's been more than that. So for the last 22, 23 years, I've been part of raising over a round a year. So it's actually over probably closer to 22-ish rounds of funding I've done over all those prior companies. Here we've raised our Series A. So we've gone through kind of angel, seed, and then Series A at this company alone.
And in this fundraising process, because I get this question all of the time, what is the most important thing? Like what, when you are going into those meetings, what should people be looking out for and asking?
I mean, that's a very broad question. I think that the biggest criteria for me is to make sure that you're pitching somebody who cares about what you care about. Because if you're not, you're never going to convince an investor that what you're building is really interesting. And this is where I actually scraped my knees. Even as much experience as I have in fundraising, I went from a relationship perspective, these are VCs I know, not thinking as much about their thesis because their thesis can be broad. SaaS software, that's a broad thesis. We fit into it. But what I didn't realize is you need to go a layer deeper, especially in our space of, you know, HR software and find people who specifically invest in the area that you're building because they're going to understand your business model better. They're going to be more excited about it. They're going to be more likely to engage. And if you don't, then you're going to spend a lot of time talking to investors that don't understand what you're doing and just they may be on to the next thing. Oh, it's Web3. Oh, it's, you know, generative AI. Those are not investors who are ever going to invest in our company. We're just in a different space.
Right. Finding the right, the people that understand how to win in your category. And
exactly.
Or, yeah. You mentioned people, which I think is the most important thing of building a business. It's the hardest thing possibly. What is the most important thing to you when hiring someone? Is there something where you're like, they have to have this? Or is it just more like a feeling when you're interviewing someone?
I mean, it's a few things. I mean, they certainly have to have the skill set, right? So if they don't have some sort of baseline skill set, then that's, you know, going to be a challenge because, you know, you need people who know how to do things and specialize in different areas. But beyond that, to me, it's much more about looking at a candidate a bit holistically. So we don't look, for instance, at education levels or where you went to school. I honestly don't care. What I care about is what you can do and what you've accomplished. And that has opened up some very interesting doors for us. So for instance, the first employee at the company was a software engineer. And he joined, but he didn't have a CS degree. He had taken a General Assembly boot camp and he had a couple months of coding experience and he was going to work with other folks on our team. But what I really liked about his background was that his first career was actually as an EY accountant. So he had all this tax knowledge and he had a master's in accounting and had this really interesting kind of background that didn't relate to his job today directly, but directly related to what we were building. And so by broadening the scope of what you're looking for, you can get really interesting talent that can apply to your job. And I wouldn't have even thought to write that job description, right? Like I want an engineer who started as an accountant. That's not a thing. And so just broadening your perspective and thinking a bit more holistically about the individual pieces of what you need rather than this is the list of criteria for my candidate has been something that's been great for us.
I think that's really smart. I also think that's encouraging to anyone listening because it's very hard when you're 18 to figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life. So knowing that you can go down a different path at any point and use a background that's in a, not, you know, it's an adjacent industry, but can add value.
Well, I think too, it's about the characteristics of what somebody brings to the table as part of that. Are you curious? And how do you show that you're curious? Are you really detail oriented and really good at following every single step? Are you somebody who wants to sit and think, you know, more artistically and kind of connect the dots in a different way? Those things are less tangible skills, but are very relevant and can cross different types of roles, which I think is really fascinating and really good for especially early job seekers and has been really valuable for us as well. The other thing that I think is a big misnomer, especially in startups, and it's a bone I've had to pick with the entire startup industry, is the concept of A players. I only want to hire A players. What the heck is an A player? Just because somebody crashes and burns in your company doesn't mean that they're not an amazingly talented person. It means they were not right for your environment, your role, your whatever. And just because somebody was amazing in another company doesn't mean they're going to succeed in your environment either. That doesn't mean that they're not talented. It just means that it has to be the whole package of where you're plugging somebody in to determine whether or not they're going to be a fit. So I really hate the concept of A and B players. I think it's so demeaning. And so I'd like to abolish that.
For the record. No, it makes so much sense. And I think if you were to ask certain people that I've worked with in different companies, they would probably have different answers on my value.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. Well, and think about it. Like, a lot of companies, they have a definition for what an A player means for them. That's fine. It doesn't mean that you can't have criteria for what that successful person looks like there, but you also can't apply somebody else's criteria and assume they fit. And you see this a lot of times in sales. Oh my gosh, this person sold so much money at this other company in an entirely different industry and you bring them in and it's like crickets and they close nothing. And you're like, what just happened? Well, they're selling something different. It's a different buyer. It's a different market, a different approach. That does not mean they're not amazing. It means they're not the fit for you. And so you really need to focus on what your criteria for success are and then find people who fit into that versus it being like, assuming there's some magical list of really amazing people that can fit everywhere and then everybody else is, you know, terrible. It's not a thing.
It's not a thing. How have you thought about building the culture of Compte?
It's something we spend a lot of time thinking about. So from day one, there were certain things that were really important to me. I wanted to build a different looking and acting tech company than anywhere else I'd ever been in my career. There was a lot of consistency across those tech companies, you know, demographics, age, you know, a different, they were in different industries, but they all looked and felt the same. And so I knew that I wanted to build a diverse team because I knew diverse perspectives around the table were going to move us faster and build a better product. We also service all types of employees. So you need to relate to the people you're working with as well. And so that's been a stated piece of how we build. I talk to the team all the time about, you know, there's what we're building, which we're obviously all super passionate about, but then there's how we're building, which is equally important to me. The how we build is something we devote just as much time on here because that relates to how we hire, who's around the table, how we make sure that people's voices are heard, thinking about how we handle compensation and equity and fundraising and all of that goes into that bucket. Because if you're not thoughtful about it and it just kind of happens, I mean, that's where you end up with a messy company. And I really don't like messy things.
So how do you keep it organized?
And some of that's my CFO brain. So from day one, I mean, like just on the fundraising side, my data room is pristine at all times. So I know that what that needs to look like. So you just start early and start clean and keep building from there. But it's also where you devote time and energy. So thinking about recruiting and hiring processes, you know, for a lot of companies, it's, oh, we're 100 people. Oh, it's 95% white people. Maybe we should think about diversity. You're already so late to the game at that point. Who wants to be the first in? I've been the first woman in many of the companies I've been part in and on the leadership team. It's not fun. It's not comfortable for anybody. So starting earlier means that you're focusing on where you source candidates, how you think about criteria, how you make space for people's voices to be heard because not everyone communicates in the same way is really critical. So just devoting time, energy to that from day one, not waiting until it's diversity isn't a solve for it later thing. It's part of how you build a fantastic cutting edge company, in my opinion.
Coming from C-level to becoming an entrepreneur, what have you had to develop in your personal like daily routine for you to just not go insane and feel
There's a few things. Yeah. I don't know if you ever feel normal, but coaching is key. Coaching is absolutely key. So I've had a personal coach, like part business, part kind of therapist coach since day one here. And that's been really critical. Just to have somebody to bounce ideas off of, think through, you know, communication styles, think through where I'm stumbling. That's been really kind of key. Also just being very mindful of the biggest adjustment for me, honestly, was changing my voice. So as a CFO, my job, because it was all early stage companies, you know, first kind of leadership and kind of board mandated. And after a decent size round was make sure the founder doesn't run off a cliff was usually my mandate. Okay, don't let them spend all of our money in the first month. Let's put some stuff in place.
Yeah.
So my job there was to be very loud and forceful and to push back because that's what you have to do with a founder CEO because they've got a lot of ideas and they're very passionate about what they do. Otherwise, they wouldn't be good at their job. If I do that as a founder, I'd bulldoze over my entire team. So I actually had to soften my approach in order to make space for other voices and perspectives to be heard, which was a pretty big adjustment for me because I've spent, you know, over 20 years push and being a little extreme because you got to balance somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I had to take a big, massive step back on that to make some space. So that was a big adjustment for me.
Oh yeah. CFOs are like, they're the drill sergeants of the company.
Yeah. Because you don't like, it's the protection. We got to make sure we're going to make payroll. We can't run out of money. So if I start seeing you do dumb stuff, I got to rein you back in because ultimately you're the ultimate guardian of all the things. So
yes,
you know.
Wolf of Wall Street when his dad comes in.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all hiding. Okay. So as far as having a coach, because I'm obsessed with having personal coaches, I think it's like such an incredible thing to invest in.
Yeah.
What types of things have you found helpful in your coaching? I'm just like personally curious.
Yeah.
helped you?
I've talked to a couple and ended up, I've now been with the woman that I'm with for, actually, I think I might've started working with her right before this. So probably about 6 years I've been working with her. And for me, what's connected, she's actually based in Denver. I'm based in Boston. So she was doing originally a lot on phone calls. That doesn't work for me. I need to at least see the person. So we started doing it over Zoom pretty early on. So it was like, I got to see facial expressions. Otherwise, yeah, I don't process information. So being able to see the person's been critical. We also, interestingly, are the same age, have similar-ish backgrounds. So she's been a COO a bunch of times. Like, she's a complete badass. She was actually like a female commander of a SWAT team when she was in the military. Like, complete, like, amazing woman. So she obviously has all the coaching credentials and has done all the training and all of that. But she's got a lot of real life business experience. But we're also more like peers in that sense too. So it's much more of a kind of a brainstorming, coaching, like trusted scenario versus it feeling like it's somebody mentoring me. And so that has worked for me. I don't think that works for everyone, but that has worked very well for me to feel like this person, she also, we're same age, we're both white women, where like there's a lot of similarities to where it's like having a conversation with a better version of yourself.
Yes. And you're, yes, that makes so much sense. I think a lot of the frustration in those dynamics is like, you don't understand.
Yes, that's exactly right.
We'll get it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I feel like there's so much shared understanding, like even just life stage understanding of like where we're at. And just that is something that's been pretty critical for me. And I don't think that works for everyone. But for me, like having to have somebody, if I had a coach that was say 20 years older than me and a man, it might not work as well. Like you do not understand what it is to be me in that room when I'm pitching. You have no idea because you've never been that person. And I need somebody who actually understands, and I don't want to explain this to you. That's what I need. I need that base level understanding because then she can push me and be like, yes, but here's what you need to try differently. Like there's a shared understanding in a place where I'm more likely to listen to the coaching that I need. If there's, okay, but you get it. Okay, yes, I need to try something different.
So you are selling to businesses, right? You're fully right. B2B.
Yes.
What have you found has been like, what's the point that clicks with these companies where they're like, okay, I need comp. This is what's going to make a difference in my HR process.
It's usually talking to companies like they have to have one of a couple problems. Either you have trouble hiring or you have trouble retaining. If you don't have either of those problems, quite frankly, do what you're doing. Don't spend any more money. You don't need us. If you have one of those problems, then it's another scenario of, okay, are your salaries competitive with your general industry? If they're not, again, you don't need us. You need to fix that problem first. If you fix that, then is your industry, you know, expecting health insurance? And if so, do you have it? And is it competitive? And if you haven't solved for that, solve for that next. There's layers of importance, right? Competitive salary, health insurance. I would argue even flexibility, remote, hybrid, how you think about that. All of those things need to be sorted out. If you have all of those done and you're still sitting there going, okay, but all my competitors have done the exact same thing because they probably have, then you got to figure out what else. And that's where we come in. So it's not the biggest dollar amount, but it actually is the biggest difference maker because everything else is table stakes anymore. So it's, all right, if we still need to figure out how we differentiate, how we compete for talent, then it's what's the most cost-effective way to do that? So are you going to bring in, you know, a mental health app and maybe pet insurance and childcare, but those are only in areas where there's 10% of your team and people don't necessarily want to use it. So you're spending a lot of money, but you got low utilization. Wah, wah, not so fun. And not taxed correctly and administratively not fun? Or do you want to go for outcomes and get the highest possible engagement? Because if people are using the thing, they're more likely to be retained. Then what do? And that's where stipends come into play. So it's kind of walking through that process. And if somebody's in the first part of it, we just say, hey, look, you got other things. You don't need us. Like, we're going to opt out because that is going to make a bigger difference for you in being a true partner for folks rather than just trying to sell, which is just not our style.
It's like Maslow hierarchy of needs.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Like, yeah, you've got to solve for some of those first. And then it's not that this is a nice to have. It's that those things are table stakes. If you don't have those, then there's no point in talking about anything else because there's nothing else you can do to solve for this. There is no amount of perks you can add if you are paying 20% below market salaries. It's not going to solve the problem. Nobody's going to take your job. They're going to be like, cute, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Amy, show me the money.
Exactly. That's exactly yeah. right.
When thinking of the future of comp, what are you most excited about?
I get really excited about the applicability of this across industries. So like a lot of tech companies, I mean, it's very easy to go after selling to other tech companies. There's an understanding of employee perks and the importance, and you know, there's been lots of employee perks, and that's great. And that's, you know, about half of our customer base. But where I get really excited is seeing how this can apply to other industries. So specifically around the entire wide world of deskless, which can be everything from construction to manufacturing to nurses to anybody who's not standing behind a desk all day. That's where you can really move the needle for people. They traditionally, in some of these industries, didn't get health insurance. They are getting very low wages and they change jobs. I mean, the turnover rates are so much higher than in the desk space. So you can have an impact for companies and help their margins. You can also have a really meaningful impact for employees as well. And that to me is really exciting because you can have a very positive impact kind of across the board. And that is, I mean, that is the vast majority of workers in our country are not behind a desk and a computer all day. And so that's really exciting to me. And we've got some of those customers already, but we're seeing more and more movement there as well.
Yeah, I think that the Facebook of the world, like the campus and all that, it did inspire a whole new generation of, okay, we have to actually take care of people.
Right, exactly. Yep.
And agreed. The shift, I'm sure you see this too, of it used to be, you're so lucky to work for me. And oh. that, right?
That will- literally, I've heard those words spoken to me and, you know, early stages of my career. Like now that's not the way it works. Thank God that's not the way it works anymore, because what a horrible kind of mindset, honestly.
The worst. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm such a fan of what you're building. And I think it's so incredibly important. But my last question for you is, what would be your number one piece of advice for a woman who is wanting to start her own business?
Take care of yourself. So it's really easy to burn yourself out. There's always more that you have to do, more that has to get done. You know, you can work very long hours and not get sleep. And if you have children, you obviously want to, I don't know, see your children, things like that. Making sure that you create some boundaries and make space for yourself in that is really critical, because if you're exhausted, you're not going to be at peak performance. And so take time to work out, take time to make sure you're fed and you get sleep, and you're going to feel better. So that's something that I got a lot of flack for early on here from on some VC panels, actually. From day one, I said, team's not working more than 40 to 45 hours a week, which is sacrilege in the startup community. Oh, you should be working all the time. No. How many companies succeeded because everyone worked 100 hours a week? Nope. They wrote really buggy, crappy code. That's what happened. And then you have to rewrite it. That's completely inefficient. I don't do inefficiency. We're going to sleep. We're going to eat. We're going to go work out. We're going to have lives outside of our job, because this is a job at the end of the day. Like, so this company isn't my baby. This company is my company. And I love it, but it's not an actual child. So let's be clear on where those boundaries need to lie and build some great things and do this together, but also recognize that this is just one sliver of somebody's personal journey, and not be so self-important that we can't take that time out. Like, it really clicked for me when I started thinking about the people who are doing actual life-saving work. When you think about people who are working to cure cancer, they're not working 120 hours a week, and they're actually working to try and save lives. Like, at our core, I love what we do, but we build software. Let's not be precious. Go home, go out to dinner with your spouse. That is something that is important. Let's just be a little realistic and pragmatic about our software.
I love that. I completely could not agree more. Amy, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on, and I can't wait to watch Compt grow.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.